Oh, hello there.
Hello, how are you?
I am fine. So now, what is this vehicle? What kind of vehicle? This is a Flex. What is a Flex?
A Flex is a new-ish model of Ford vehicle.
The Ford Flex.
Yeah, and last year I won some money from a radio, satellite radio contest.
We're gonna talk about that.
And this is what it turned into.
So. Oh, did you use all 25K for the Ford Flex?
I used all of it and a little bit more.
If
you include the trailer, you know, as well. We had to get a trailer to fill all of our gear. So all in all, you know, it's amazing. It was completely incredible timing in that I won.
You needed a Ford Flex.
I had just been talking about how I needed a Ford
Flex. I need a Ford Flex.
Yeah.
Now we go backwards in time. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Certainly. My name is Dan Mangan.
So you've been at this for this official trying to have a music career thing in a formalized way for about 7 years, right? And you know, one of the things that's really interesting is that you really, when we're talking DIY, you were about, when you started, as DIY as you could possibly be, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just basically kind of figured if this is what I wanted to do, I was going to treat it like I was starting a restaurant. And I was just going to, if you start a restaurant, you're going to work there 24 hours a day for the first couple of years to get it off the ground. You're going to do whatever it takes, and you're going to, put every cent that you make back into it. And so for, you know, 7 years, I sold CDs off stage. I mailed CDs to people. I basically took any gig I could possibly get anywhere in the world. I toured Europe with a train pass on my own. I did a lot of traveling and a lot of just hunting down, gigs anywhere in the world that I could play them. And I think somewhere along the way, I don't know how to say it, but I kind of figured out exactly what it was that I had to say in terms of making music, and I kind of found my own voice, as they say. But I don't know. It was a long road.
And you know, one of the things that I read was that you used to book your own tours on Google.
Yeah. Well, I always say, to any band out there who's looking for, you know, how do we get going? And I just say, Google is your friend. I mean, it's amazing. You can find out what venues exist in every city. You can find out what resources you have to I mean, basically anyone who would ever work for you, like an agent or a manager or label or anything, it's not like anything that they're doing you couldn't do yourself. So if you have the time, you might as well do it. You probably don't have the money. You kind of have to be creative. But in general, I just figured that, you know, any time that I'm not putting into this is time that is leisure time. So it's sort of like just focus on getting out there on the road and trying to, you know, find a crowd to play to.
But then here you are opening, you know, at the Fillmore.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that is this your first official time playing in San Francisco?
You know what? The last time I played in San Francisco was about 3 or 4 years ago, and I played at a laundromat.
At Brainwash?
I played at Brainwash, and the sound system didn't work, and there was, I think that there might have supposed to be a sound guy, but he didn't show up, and so I basically just kind of played acoustically to, you know, maybe about 12 people while they waited for their laundry to be done. So this is a significantly more interesting gig to get come back and be able to do the Fillmore, which is just incredible.
Well, yeah, and now, I mean, all one has to do is go on your website, and we realize there's a whole cadre of human beings behind you now that are helping out.
Cadre, that's a nice...
Cadre is a good word, isn't it?
Nice word usage. Yeah, that was well done. Yeah, I mean, I've been...
You've got booking agents, and you've got tour people, and you've got, you know, and we'll get to the record company in a little while, but you know, still, 7 years is 7 years.
Yeah, and, you know, I've kind of moved forward with the idea that I would never work with someone in a business sense that I would hesitate to introduce to my family. And it's kind of like, you know, it's going to be a heavy...
So you've had the folks from the Paradigm Agency over for dinner?
No, but I would gladly have them over for dinner. Yeah, it's more of a hypothetical question than it is a practical one. But I've got a lot of really, really great help at this point. It was just some fantastic... you know, sometimes you just fall ass backwards into the right hands. So I've lucked out more than one time.
Did I read that you drafted a business plan to get the album made? And if so, tell me your pitch.
Well, you know, I didn't have any money to make a second album. I had made an album back in 2005, and then I toured with that for a while, and then that was kind of getting old. And I wasn't even really playing anything on that album when I was touring anymore. And so I knew it was time to make a new record, but I didn't have any money, and I, you know, my family doesn't really have a whole lot of money. So I just kind of made a marketing plan, as if I was going to walk into a bank and say, here's my business idea, will you give me a loan? And then I sent that to, you know, kind of family, friends, and to other people in the family, and you know, collected a couple hundred bucks here, a couple hundred bucks there, a couple, you know, and a couple thousand dollars from a few people who could, and it's amazing. You know, a year later, I had paid everybody back, and it was just, it was a gamble, it was a risk, but it really worked out.
And that was pre this, the websites now that people, the bands are going in there and, you know, and asking their fans to each donate $10. And if you have 5,000 fans, it's kind of like, ooh, we still can't make an album, but we'll try.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of Kickstarter. I think that's like, yeah.
Yeah, Kickstarter. Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's wild. It is amazing. I didn't know of it at the time. I do know of it now, but I think I probably would have done that.
But I do have to, you know, launch into a little bit of Aerosmith.
Oh, wow. I bought my first cassette tape when I was about 6 or 7. I think it was Simpsons Sing the Blues. And then I remember the first time I ever walked into a record store and bought a CD was I bought Aerosmith Get a Grip. And I was like 9, I think, when it came out. And I listened to the crap out of that record. You know, I was 9, so I was, you know, I was feasting on music. You know, when I was a kid, really little kid, you know, it was all Beatles and it was all Paul Simon and Van Morrison, whatever my parents had in the record collection. And then as I got older, you know, of course it was the 90s, so I got into grunge and all that kind of stuff. But I don't, actually, you know, I was going to say that the dreaded question from all artists is when you're speaking to a DJ or a journalist and they probably haven't really done much research and they don't really know who you are, and they say so introspectively, you know, who is Dan Mangan? And it sounds like a big question, and then you have to kind of,
then you realize that they have absolutely no. My favorite is, and it's been done as a joke, so the road.
Yeah. Or what's the craziest thing that's ever happened?
Oh,
is
no,
that one of your questions?
So one of the things that I have read you said, and it's one of the things I said on the air, I kind of have this rebel thing against singer-songwriters, right?
Rightfully so.
Because nobody needs another singer-songwriter. But you're not a singer-songwriter. These are, you know, it's very easy, and again, my mom's from Montreal, so I grew up on a lot of 70s Canadian stuff. Mm. Murray McLaughlin and Bruce Coburn.
Yeah.
Right, and I have all their stuff.
Yeah.
But these guys would even tell you, you know, that they were not folk singers, that they were writing songs. And even yours, when you come right down to it, Robots or, you know, or Indie, these are pop songs.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I don't think pop is a dirty word, you know. I like, how could you describe anything the New Pornographers have ever done as something that wasn't pop? Of course it's pop.
Three times.
But it's great, you know. So I think that if pop is done well, I mean, generally, like, if you have a chorus in your song, if you're not playing world or jazz music, you're playing pop music. And when we found out that we were going to go do this tour with the Walkmen and Japan Joys, I was just saying, thank God, you know, an indie rock, a couple of indie rock bands, that sounds amazing, that sounds great.
You know, I was watching tonight, and there's the audience, and they're calling out songs, right? And admittedly, I play it on the radio, but this internet thing has really allowed, you know, you release a record and people glom on very, you know, very, very fast.
Yeah.
And that does help, right?
The internet is amazing. You know, people who worry about the music industry crumbling, and I just have no time for it. I think that the internet has democratized music such that we have more great music than we ever have had in history happening at the same time. And it's not to say that the music that's happening now is better than the music that used to happen. It's just saying that there is more great music than ever, more choice. And, you know, the internet just has equaled the playing field. It has totally cut the funnels of distribution that used to occur. So now if something is good and if the people are active, it probably will get heard. And it is amazing to come to a city where, you know, the last time I played, there was 12 people and they were all, you know, noses in books doing their laundry at a laundromat. You know, to come back and have people, yelling out songs is incredible. You can't really I can't imagine how that happens, but it does.
So we have something in common, except mine's different than yours, and I'm going to launch this question by saying something funny. I have a crush on Susan Day.
Oh, wow, nice.
And you have a crush on?
Oh, geez. I have a crush on a few different people. I remember having a crush on...
Was it Shirley Jones?
Oh, wow. Well, you're doing some digging. I think I did. Yeah, I do. Yeah, definitely. Shirley Jones. She was a babe for the Partridge Family, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, come on. What a babe. How can you not have a crush on her?
I know. So the question is, Partridge Family cover?
You know what? I'm actually game to, like, I don't do many covers hardly ever. But when it comes to doing a cover, I don't think anything is off limits.
Pick a Canadian. If you're going to be a Canadian artist and you're going to be on a Canadian indie label. Well, gosh golly jeepers.
Yeah, it was kind of jackpot. I mean, I have had so much respect for that record label since they started. I think it was about 2003 or 4. And I remember seeing Broken Social Scene way back then and just losing my mind to their show. And I had so much respect for that label that I don't think that I ever even sent them my record, because I was so in awe that I figured that, you know, they probably wouldn't like it or something. And so when that all kind of came together very organically, it felt pretty symmetry had occurred. And I just couldn't be more thrilled to be with them. I really kind of, like I said, hit the jackpot in terms of the Canadian music industry. And they just have such a incredible aesthetic to what they do visually, audio-wise. And they're just genuinely the nicest, smartest people around. And I just, you walk into their office and it's just such a great vibe of what's going on, and everyone's really engaged and excited about what they're working with. And so it's amazing. I couldn't have asked for more.
The videos. So, one of the things that I like about the gang and robots, the gangs, yeah, is that, number one, they're really well-dressed. This is a very hipster, well-dressed gang. But in the end, they just want to have fun like all of us, right?
Yeah, I mean, the video for Robots, we really wanted to be about as ridiculous as we could possibly be.
Wink.
Yeah, it's a big tongue-in-cheek kind of video. Do you remember a movie from the 80s called The Warriors?
Very much so.
And we kind of wanted to pay homage to The Warriors, so we dressed up two gangs in opposing colors, and everybody kind of has very ironic clothing on, and they kind of face off, and they have this robot war where they take out these little toy robots and they march towards each other and one falls over. And in the end, the robots teach the humans the compassion that they lacked. So it's a bit of a twist and a big tongue-in-cheek thing. And, it's tough. With a video, a music video or something, in a lot of ways, it's easy to worry about, what's going to look cool, what's going to be a cool... And so we kind of went the other way. We kind of figured, let's just be as ridiculous as we want to be and see if it turns out. And I casted it really specifically. I asked different friends from the musical community in Vancouver who I knew would be able to lose their inhibitions and just kind of roll with it and be stupid. So it's a silly video, but I do love it. I get a kick out of it still.
And you did a similar thing with the Indie Queens Are Waiting, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of... the song was inspired by a little cafe that I used to go to in Vancouver, and the line is down the road and on the right hand side there's a place I sometimes like to dine. And I just found that there was I'd run into the same people all the time in these places, and we all worked night jobs, and then during the day we just kind of wandered around, like went to the guitar store, bought some strings, and everyone kind of has a band, and it's this really beautiful community of really great people. And the song is kind of a tongue in, again, I have a thing with tongue in cheek. I can't really cut my kind of loving cynicism of things. But, I kind of felt like in order to fully comprehend the scene that I was kind of in, I had to kind of put some kind of...
I See could become an anthem.
Well,
because it is...
It's an ambitious prediction.
But it is a laugh, or as they say in Diner, Kevin Bacon in Diner says, it's a smile. And the Indie Queens Are Waiting. I mean, if you don't get what we're talking about here within seconds, because the whole it is a twist on the fact that everybody wants to be indie, but yet indie's not indie, whether you're talking film or music. What's indie? Because the second it becomes big, is it still indie? And do you want to remain indie? I ask bands, I always say, so do you want to be big or do you want to play to 10 people all your life to keep your indie cred?
Yeah. You know, I feel like as long as you really are honest about the music that you're doing, that if the crowd builds and you start playing to larger audiences, as long as you really stay true and you don't kind of cry. I mean, think of like bands like Beirut or The Walkmen, or these are bands that are quite big and playing to large crowds, but you know, they still carry a certain amount of kind of niche market to them. And I don't know. Do you remember in Karate Kid, Mr. Miyagi says, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are, there's always someone better. It doesn't matter how cool you are, there's always someone cooler than you. So at the heart of it, if you can just be honest and sincere about what you're doing, and, you know, have an eye on the scene and on what's evolving and on what's kind of fresh and happening, and keep trying to make music that's important and that could last and be timeless, well, you know, you can't really lose.
Yeah, the quest for being cool or cooler or competing just never works.
Well, and it's almost like the second you become the coolest person you know, that's like, that's like a recipe for being a total jerk or something. I don't know. Like, it's, you know, why? I don't know. I think that if you are a really genuinely good person to the people that you know and kind of make the world a little, you know, do your best to create a sense of, you know, contentment around the environment that you exist in, then you are inherently going to make things cool. And it's not even about what you're wearing so much as, you know, your attitude.